Pushkin.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
I want to let you know that Rick has a new podcast called Tetragrammaton. After about 4 to 5 years of recording Broken Record, Rick decided he wanted to talk to more than just musicians. So on his new podcast, he'll be talking to actors, directors, wrestlers, business people, anyone that Rick finds interesting. So make sure to subscribe to Tetragrammaton wherever you listen to podcasts. At 81 years old, Graham Nash describes his life as a magic story from beginning to end. And he's not wrong. Graham's career began in 62 as a singer-songwriter in the British pop band The Hollies. After a string of hits in the UK, Graham moved to LA to start a band with former Byrds vocalist David Crosby and Stephen Stills, whose band Buffalo Springfield had just broken up. From the start, Crosby, Stills, and Nash were dubbed a folk rock supergroup and went on to become one of the era's most revered bands thanks to their gorgeous three-part harmony and exquisite songwriting. Following the death of David Crosby in January, Rick Rubin sat down with Graham Nash to talk about Graham's deep love and admiration for Cros. On today's episode, we'll hear the first part of Rick's conversation with Graham, who reminisces about the day he met Crosby, who immediately rolled Graham the most perfect joint he'd ever seen. Graham also explains how it was actually Cass Elliot from the Mamas and Papas who was responsible for bringing CSN together. And he recalls classic stories about Neil Young's unpredictable early days with the group. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's part one of Rick Rubin's conversation with Graham Nash.
What's happening, man?
Good morning.
How you feeling, man?
Well, it's been an intense year so far, you know.
Yeah.
Losing friends and... The combination of being incredibly sad because of the loss of friends and incredibly excited that I have a new record coming out. It's like I'm in between this thing. It's been very strange this year.
Completely understood. Can we listen to something together before we start talking?
Sure.
Are you up for that?
Why not?
Okay, let's listen to something. Comes up for you when we listen to this?
I'm very sad at David's passing. I was just thinking about how wonderful his voice is. You know, he had an incredible voice. And this was a very tender moment for both of us. I have to smile at the simplicity and the beautifulness of him singing alone like that, and then me coming in on the harmony. I'm going to miss David a great deal in my life. That's a beautiful piece of music.
It's astounding. It feels like it's coming from another planet. It moves me so much. And when I hear it, it takes me to another place. I'm so thankful for you both for making something so beautiful for us to have. Tell me about the recording of that. How does that recording exist in the world? What brought up that?
David has this this 12-string that he built from two different guitars, a Guild guitar and a Martin guitar. And it sounded beautiful. And David was very sad at that moment. And basically, he sat down and played it. And that's one of the beauties of it. It's a perfectly instant capture of a great piece of music. And it was done, if it's 2 minutes and 52 seconds, he did it in one take. And then we added the unearthly sounds that adds to putting it into the space that it is. And what it was David had turned me on to this glass harmonica that someone had built. And it was wine glasses on their side, and what we did was we replicated that on an 8-track machine, and we stood and we tuned the glass and we did the finger round it to produce the sound, and we recorded that to one track and then took some water out of the glass so it goes up in key, and we put that to the... So when we had 8 tracks of this beautiful glass harmonica sound that we would bring in and out to... project that piece of music into the future.
So beautiful. And then the harmonies, in general, when you're coming up with harmonies, for you, is it a mathematical equation or is it an instinctive finding the note?
I have to, in a strange way, be David, watching his body language, watching his breathing, watching him. I have to be a part of David momentarily so I can lock in perfectly with what he's doing. And because he had such a wonderful melody, it was very easy to find interesting harmonies to go along with that melody. And those harmonies, once again, put it into that beautiful sound that you were discussing earlier.
I never thought about this before, but hearing what you're saying, is the fact that the two voices are singing in perfect unison essential to making the harmony do what the harmony does?
Yes, I believe you're right. And we were pretty good at duplicating. If I listened to one of David's lead vocal tracks, I soak it into my soul and I just sing what I think is appropriate. And in most cases, it works out pretty good. Because of it, the direct melody that he's singing, he trusts me to do the right thing. And I loved that part of our relationship, the trust that we had with each other.
And I assume the trust was mainly as it related to singing. Is that, would you say that or no?
No, I would say the trust came from being deep friends.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. I wouldn't have guessed you say that. Yeah. I love hearing that.
Yeah, it's because we were so close together. I mean, we could really harmonize, you know, and
yes,
we had a wonderful time. It was great making that particular piece of music because I wanted to stay out of David's way because he was talking to your heart directly. And I only came in when I felt it needed to take another breath.
And it gives the song beautiful dynamics. You're not aware of the length of the song because of the changes in dynamics that happen because the harmony's not there all the time.
Right.
So there's a period of time where there's no harmony, then there's a period where there's your harmony, but then there's the big ending with many voices.
Right.
I imagine all you and David.
Yes, all me and David.
Amazing. So beautiful.
Yes.
Tell me about meeting David.
I once was in the village in New York here, and I saw the birds walking into a record store. And I knew who they were. They had no idea that I was there, and I never approached them at all. But we had a mutual friend, Cass Elliott, from the Mamas and the Papas. I sincerely believe that Cass knew what CSN would sound like if CSN ever got together. She was friends with David and Stephen, obviously, and she knew that David had been thrown out of the birds and Stephen, the Buffalo Springfield, had broken up. And Cass instinctively felt that if they had a third harmony, it would be great. So one day, I'm in Los Angeles, Cass calls me and says, you know, what are you doing at noon? I said, actually, we have a day off. I'm not doing anything. She said, good, I'll come and pick you up. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. She picks me up at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Los Angeles and was there in her Porsche, convertible Porsche. So we got in. And of course, you know, Laurel Canyon is 10 minutes from Hollywood. And she picked me up and took me to this strange little house. And there was another convertible Porsche right in the garage there. Anyway, we go upstairs and there's this nice living room, very little furniture, a couch and a couple of speakers and a stack of music stuff. And then there's this guy lying on the couch in a white and blue striped T-shirt and his jeans, no shoes. And on his chest was a shoebox lid full of grass. And he was looking at me while Cass introduced me as her friend. And he never lost eye contact with me whilst shaking the lid of the shoebox and separating the seed from the stems from the actual grass. And I thought that was amazing. And then he proceeded to roll one of the most perfect joints I'd ever seen in my life. And Cass introduced me, And he knew that I was the high voice in the Hollies. And we got on beautifully. And that was the first day I ever met David.
And was this your first trip to California?
No. We had been to California earlier. Cass thought that Lou Adler, their producer, might want to produce the Hollies. And she paid for the Hollies to fly from New York to Los Angeles to meet with Lou.
Amazing.
So, no, it wasn't the first time I'd been in Los Angeles.
And how did you meet Cass?
The Hollies were being given an introductory getting together to release an album. And it's one of those things where, you know, you have a glass of wine and you're waiting for, you know, somebody. And this little 15-year-old kid came up to me and he knew everything about the Hollies. He knew every B-side, he knew every A-side, he knew everything that we'd done in a foreign language. He was a big Hollies fan. It was Rodney Bingenheimer, who later became a very famous DJ in Los Angeles. And so Rodney looked at me and he said, so what are you doing after this getting together? I said, I'm English. So I said, I'm not sure. What do you think you're doing? He said, well, I have these friends and they're recording down the street and I thought you might want to go to a session. And I said, it sounds interesting. Who are your friends? And he said, they're called the Mamas and the Papas. Now, I'd seen their first album cover, and I saw Michelle on the front, and it was very attracted to this blonde, you know, hippie Southern California girl. And when I went into the session, John and Denny and Michelle were putting an overdub in the studio, so I couldn't go in there. But outside the studio was Cass, so I start talking to Cass. And one of the things she asked me, she said, what do you think John Lennon would think about the Mamas and Papas? And I said, well, you know, I don't know John that well, but I know that he would probably keep you at arm's length, you know, until he figured out that he was comfortable with you and then he would open up. And I said, so he probably would put your music down at first before he accepted it. And I look at Cass and she's crying. What I didn't know is that Cass had a crush on John Lennon, and that's how I met Cass.
Wow. Interesting story. Had you heard the Mamas and the Papas music at that time or not yet?
I had heard the music because I had that first album. I did know that they were a pretty damn fine band. And it was only, you know, when I told you that I think that Cass intuitively knew what Stephen and David's sound would do with an added harmony. I think she knew right from the very beginning, before any of us, what that would sound like. You know, she's in my prayers every single night. She's the last face I see when I go through my prayers. And she will always be there. And it's one of the reasons why on every album that we have made since she passed away, we have dedicated the album to Cass, because in a strange way, she started it all.
Beautiful. And it makes sense that she would understand the three voices because of her role in the Mamas and the Papas. She understood three-part harmony.
Yes.
It makes sense. It makes sense. And she fought to get into that band because they didn't want her in that band. But she knew that her voice would do something special with theirs.
That's right. That's right. But she physically, she didn't look like, you know, she should be in that band. You know, she was heavy. She was a large lady and she knew it. But boy, could Cass Elliott sing.
Did you ever get to sing with her?
She is the only voice on the first Crosby, Stills and Nash record that is not me and David and Stephen.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. Ah. What does she sing? Do you remember?
Yeah, she sang a high harmony on Pre-Road Downs.
Wow. So cool.
Mm.
We'll be back after a quick break with more from Rick Rubin and Graham Nash.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
It's almost here. The Knicks anniversary sale starts this Thursday, May 9th at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knicks' biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knicks leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knicks wireless bra. So, mark your calendar this Thursday, May 9th, for the Knicks anniversary sale. Get 30% off all leak-proof underwear, shapewear, activewear, and more. It only happens once a year at knix.com. That's knix.com. Don't miss this.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. We're back with Rick Rubin's conversation with Graham Nash.
How was the David who passed different than the David laying on the couch at Cass's?
David was a very interesting couple of people. On one side, he could be most generous, funny, brilliant at telling stories, obviously brilliant at singing and playing the guitar, totally unique. The other side of David was if there was something that he didn't like, he had no problem in telling you, and he could become nasty and he could become vicious. And those were the two sides of David. And I always wanted the first side, you know. I want to feel easy. I want to feel light. I want to feel part of whatever. But the other side of David was pretty scary.
Knowing that scary side of him, did it help you to feel like that's just David? Or did it always feel personal if he would say something not nice?
It would feel personal. And I always knew that that part of David was there. I tried to steer our relationship away from the nasty side of David. And we managed to do that probably 95% of the time that we were together.
Tell me about leaving England. How popular were the Hollies? I think of them as very popular. I don't really know. I wasn't there. How popular were the Hollies?
How about 15 top 10 records in 7 years?
Wow. So popular band.
Yes.
Tell me about the world that the Hollies appeared in. What was the world that allowed the Hollies to come together?
The Hollies were five kids from the north of England who made it down to London and managed to be recorded, and we, as I said, we had many, many top 10 records. It was easy, it's strange, but it was very easy for me to leave that band because it happened at a time when we had recorded a song called King Midas in Reverse, which is a song that I wrote. And normally, a Hollies release would go into the top 10 within the first couple of weeks. This didn't. This only made it to the low 30s. And so the Hollies stopped trusting my musical path. So it happened at that time I was feeling a little removed from them. And then David came into my life. And at one point I had gone from London to Los Angeles to spend a few days with Joni Mitchell. And when I got to the house, there were other voices there, which I wasn't too happy with. But it was David and Stephen, and they were having dinner with Joni. And at one point, after dinner and smoking a big one, David said to Stephen, play Willie that song that we were doing. And they were doing a two-part harmony on a song of Stevens called You Don't Have to Cry. They got to the end of it, and I was overwhelmed in how beautiful the song was and how simple it was and how beautiful it was. And I asked them to sing it again, and they sang it again. In the meantime, I'm learning. I asked them to sing it just one more time. And when they did, I put my harmony on, and my world changed completely.
Amazing.
Once I heard that sound,
yeah,
which happened within the first 45 seconds of us ever singing together, that sound was created.
Yeah,
that was how magical it seemed to me. And once I had heard that, there was no doubt as a musician what I had to do. I had to undo my life and reform my life. And that's what I did. I left the Hollies. I left my equipment. I came to America with a suitcase and my guitar and a strange mirror that I have that I still have to this day. And it was overwhelmingly easy to leave the Hollies. And a lot of people thought I was crazy because it was a very popular band. And as a matter of fact, they're still going to this day. And it, I think this week is the 60th anniversary of the release of our first record.
Amazing.
Tell me about it.
So cool. Has there ever been a live Hollies reunion? Have you ever sung together since leaving or never?
Yes. I got a call one day from Tony Hicks that there was a very famous English television show called Top of the Pops. And we had done the very first one. And this was 25 years later. And they wanted the Hollies to do the show again. And obviously, I wasn't there. I was in America. And so I went over there and we did sing. And we did a short tour after that. I think it was in like 83 or something. And there's a radio show wanting to record the entire show on two track. And they did. And it was beautiful. So I did sing with the Hollies after I left, and I was proud to do it, and that same magic was there.
It's beautiful, and it's beautiful that there's a recording that exists that people can experience it. Beautiful.
Indeed.
Was your relationship with Joni at all in the consideration of your deciding to leave England, or was it purely the band?
Well, you know, in the big picture, it was purely the band. But in the small picture, you know, the addition of Joni Mitchell to the equation was fantastic.
Yeah, because I imagine if you're at the age that you're at, you're starting a relationship with someone that you feel strongly about, I could see that having a strong gravitational force.
Absolutely. We have known each other a long time, Rick, and you know that I've always said that my life has been a magic story from beginning to end. And quite frankly, yes, with the release of my new record, it's still going on, you know, 60 years later.
Incredible. And speaking to that magic, my first memory of, I don't even know if we met, but of seeing you was, I was on the beach in Kauai, I don't know, 30 years ago, maybe one of the first times I was in Kauai, might have been the first time I was in Kauai, and I was on Hanalei Beach, and I was laying on the beach, and it was Christmas, and
I know
and
you
I see Santa Claus in full garb coming down the beach, giving everyone on the beach candy canes, and that was you.
Yeah, that's right. I'd lived on the island for a great many years, and it was an annual trip that me and my family did. We would go and dress up and put funny hats on and all that kind of stuff and hand out candy canes to everybody that wanted one. So that was the first time you saw me?
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, I didn't meet you at that time, but someone's like, oh, that's Graham Nash.
Yeah.
Coming to California from the experience you had in England, what was the world of California like in those days? How was it different than even the music scene that you came from in England? How did it feel different?
It felt different from the point of view of freedom. When we were in England, if you didn't know John and Paul and George and Ringo, you were nobody. You couldn't touch the board. You couldn't add the bass if you wanted to. You had to talk to your producer, who talked to the engineer, who would then, you know, in his white smock, turn the bass up, you know. Making records then was wonderful. I mean, there we were, making actual records. Fantastic. It was a different world in the freedom. When I came here, people wanted to know my opinion. People said, well, you know, what do you think of this? How do you think we should do this? What would you do here? And it was freedom. I mean, Laurel Canyon in those days was unbelievable. It was sunshine. It was full of music. It was full of pretty ladies. It was, in a way, a small rock and roll paradise. And it was very, very different from the way that that we had been recording in England. When I said that we had to talk to our producer and then he would talk to the engineer to turn the bass up, once you started to sell a lot of records, you could do what you want. And we did. And it was a thing that even David and I recognized. And we admitted to each other that we can't be a product of this music industry that gets forgotten. We have to maintain our hold on the tools of our trade, meaning we need to be in a place where we can call up a studio, book the time, book the tape, book the musicians, and do it. And it was very different from the way that I was recording in England.
So in England, you felt like you were at the mercy of the powers that be about when you could record and or all parts of it, whereas in America, you had a more of a sense of freedom.
Absolutely. I mean, even at Abbey Road, where it was we were recording, we had to stop recording at 10:30 because that's what Ron Richards, our producer, said. And it wasn't until years later we realized that 10:30 was the time when the pubs were shutting and they wanted a drink after the day. So they would shut amazing. Everything down at 10:30. Now then, amazing. Obviously, when we started to sell millions of records and it all changed, then we went past 10:30, that's for sure.
Technically, you've seen a lot of changes technically in the recording business from when you started till now. Describe some of what you think have been some of the biggest changes along the way from the earliest days of the Hollies to now in terms of what you can create and how you can create it.
The first time we were recording, it was on 2-track, and that was it. And now you have 1,000 tracks on your iPhone.
Yeah.
It's very, very different. But you know something, Rick? As you well know, no amount of technology can make a bad song into a good song.
Yes.
You have to start with a good song. And that's what we do. We try to start with the good song that each one of us loves. We had this kind of rule that that we only recorded songs that each one of us really loved.
Within Crosby, Stills, and Nash, did relationships change over time? Were there bonds created between members that shifted at different times? Because you've known each other for a long period of time.
Yes. Mainly it was David and I. Choosing the name of the band, right? Stephen wanted it to be Stills, Crosby, Nash with a hyphen. I said, try and say that. And he tried to say it. And I said, see, you can't say it smoothly. I says, the only combination of these three voices that makes sense sonically was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. That's the way it came out. The easiest, and that's the way that we did it. And unfortunately, on that first album cover, we're sitting in the wrong order, and people for a few months after that thought I'd written Guinevere.
It also has a musical, Crosby, Stills, and Nash has a musical phrasing to it, just that the name has a musical phrasing.
Absolutely, and that's why we chose it.
It's the better lyric of the different choices.
So the power was mainly me and David. We formed the bond that you were talking about a little earlier. Yeah, sometimes it would shift, but not often. Mostly, David and I knew what was best for us. You know, Stephen, in this particular name incident, his ego was in the way, and it was David and I that convinced him that it should be Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
And he went along with it, which is a testament to, ultimately, even when there's a difference of opinion, if you get to the best solution, everybody wins.
Correct. And it's very democratic, too. Even though there's only three of us. If two of us wanted to do it, that's the way the three of us did it.
We have to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Graham Nash. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
It's almost here. The Knix anniversary sale starts this Thursday, May 9th at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. So, mark your calendar this Thursday, May 9th, for the Knix anniversary sale. Get 30% off all leak-proof underwear, shapewear, activewear, and more. It only happens once a year at knix.com. That's K-N-I-X.com. Don't miss this.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
We're back with the rest of Rick Rubin's conversation with Graham Nash.
How popular were Crosby, Stills, and Nash out of the box?
People used to tell me you couldn't go past any college places to live where the window wasn't open and Crosby, Stills, and Nash music was coming out of it. We had created a sound that we knew was going to be pretty popular, you know, because, I mean, between, you know, the Byrds and the Buffalo Springfield and the Hollies, we'd had a lot of hit records. We knew what was popular. We knew what would grab people's ears. And we knew that with Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, we knew that no one was going to get up and take the needle off the record after that. You've got to hear what the rest of the record is. And it was the same when we did Deja Vu, too. You know, I came to Stephen one day and said, you know, we don't have Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And he said, I know, we used it on the first record. I said, no, you misunderstand me. We don't have that song where you're guaranteed that no one will get up and take off the needle off the record. He heard me. A day and a half later, we were staying at the Caravan Lodge Motel in San Francisco, because we were recording at Wally Hyder's studios. And 1.5 days later, after that conversation with Stephen, he goes, hey, Willie, what do you think of this? And he played me Carry On. And I said,
unbelievable.
Oh, boy, did you just knock it out of the park?
That's why he wanted it to be called Stills, Crosby, and Nash.
Yep. And, you know, he was right in thinking that. I mean, you must understand, Stephen played most of the instruments on our first record. Yes, amazing. David and I did our, you know, play guitar on Long Time Gone and play guitar on Guinevere, and I'd play guitar on my songs. But Stephen played lead guitar, rhythm guitar, bass, piano, B3, and percussion.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But ultimately, it's about the songs.
Yes.
And everybody contributed to the songs, and the voices are the voices, and it's that combination. It really doesn't matter who contributes what. If the thing is so good, everybody wins. So it worked out.
Yes.
It all worked.
I always want to win. When I'm faced with a problem, I try and figure out a solution where everybody wins.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. And chances are, if everybody wins, it's a better solution in terms of outwardly in the world. Because if there are only three people involved and all three people are on the same page, the chances of more people being on the same page just seems statistically better. Makes sense.
Yep, it sure does.
Yeah, if someone in the group doesn't like it, why would a stranger like it?
Correct.
You know, it makes sense.
That's right. And that's why we only do songs that each of us loves.
Beautiful. Another question about harmony. How much of the magic of different voices singing together can be planned versus it's just the nature of the voices and you can't plan it?
It was a combination of both. And we did sing a lot, you know, totally instinctively. But sometimes you have to really plan it, particularly when you added Neil Young to the combination. Three-part harmony is very different than four-part, as you well know. And so with CSNY vocals, some of it was planned, like Carry On, with the song we were just talking about. When we get to the very end there, where we go almost a cappella, we had to plan those harmonies because we added another voice.
How did Neil end up in that picture? How did Neil join?
Remember a moment ago, I was telling you that Stephen played all the instruments or most of the instruments on that first record?
Yes.
Instinctively, we knew that this album that we had just put out was going to be very, very popular. We instinctively felt that. And we were correct, of course. The addition of Neil happened this way. Stephen and David were having dinner in New York City at Ahmet Erdogan's house. Ahmet was the CEO of Atlantic Records, and he was a great fan of ours and protected us a great many times. For instance, we signed a contract first to do an album a year. We never did an album a year. It's, you know, sometimes there's many years between albums. But Ahmet protected us. And after dinner, they were talking about the fact that we would have to go on the road. And he knew that Stephen would play most of the instruments. So he said, I know who you should get, man. Stephen said to Ahmet, oh, you do? Who is that? He goes, well, man, I think you should get Neil Young. And Stephen said, Ahmet, we've just been through 2 years of madness with this kid. You know, he's in the band. He's out of the band. He's not in the band. Yes, he is in the band. He does want to do the Ed Sullivan Show. No, he's not doing the Ed Sullivan Show. Stephen said, do you want me to do all that? And Ahmet said, and quite correctly, no, I'm just thinking of the music. I think that he would add something great to the band. And when Stephen and David kind of admitted to Ahmet that that was probably the right thing to do, when they told me, I said, wait a second, I've never even met Neil Young. How can we add somebody to this band that I've never even met? I need to know whether I can be his friend, whether I could tell him secrets. I don't know. I need to meet Neil Young. And so Neil and I had breakfast in the Village here in New York. And I was convinced afterwards that, yeah, this kid should actually be in the band. He's a great songwriter. I personally feel that he's a great singer also. But I think Bob Dylan's a great singer too, and a lot of people you know, disagree with me. But that's how Neil Young came into the band.
Amazing. And hearing that story, what it makes me think of is Crosby, Stills, and Nash were a vocal group. And by adding Neil, it becomes a rock band.
Yep. That's why he's there. Because
makes sense.
Stephen and Neil playing it, and I experienced this 1,000 times, standing in the middle of the stage while Neil Young and Stephen Stills are talking to each other with their guitars is an incredible moment, and it happened a thousand times for me. I would be astonished at their conversations that they could have with their guitars, both angry and loving. Their conversations with their guitars is something to behold, and I loved every moment.
And there's no question that both of them respect each other's musicality in a way that they view each other as equals.
Yeah.
So that also lends a great credibility. There's no sideman in that equation of those two guitar players.
That's right. I remember one night on stage, Stephen did an incredible solo in one song, and Neil came up to me and he nudged me and he said, "I can't do that."
It's great.
Yeah. Stephen and Neil have this magic between them that goes on to this day. I mean, I think they're going to play another Light Up the Blues show for autism in Los Angeles in about a month.
Oh, beautiful. That'd be great. Tell me how songs get written, and how do you write a song versus how you believe Stills, Crosby, or Neil would do it?
I think we write songs from the same place. First of all, we have to feel something. We have to hear something that pisses us off. We have to hear something that makes us fall in love. We have to hear something, and we have to feel something. And when I feel something, when I see something that happening, when I, you know, check out the world news and something mad is going on, if I pick up on something that I don't think is right, I have to do my research, and I recognize the fact that your words are very important. And once I get in that mood, I then need a title. And when I come up with a title, it usually ends up somewhere in the end of the first chorus. You know, I have to feel something. And when I do, I'm dedicated to making it the simplest, most communicative piece of music that I can make. I personally am not interested in waiting for 7 minutes before you know what I'm talking about. I want you immediately. And I think I show that on this new record. I mean, the opening line of my new record is, "I used to think that I would never love again."
Wow. Beautiful line.
It's a strong line to open up an album with, but it indicates what's to come.
It's a great opening line because it tells us so much and opens the door for now this, you know, it's like once upon a time, we know there's going to be a big story following it. It's a line like that. It really is a, what's going to happen now? Gets your attention and pulls you into the story.
Yeah. And that's why the album is called Now.
It's called Now. Beautiful.
And there's a beautiful photograph of me that my wife Amy took, as she has done and crafted my image for the last 5 or 6 years. It's a beautiful shot of me. I do look my age, and so what? It's me now.
Yeah, it's honest. And there's nothing more powerful in music than honesty, all aspects of it. That's what attracts us, warts and all. You know,
right.
we like the humanity in it.
Yes. That's why the opening line of my album is so strong, I feel. I mean, wouldn't you want to hear what the rest of that song was and then what's the rest of the album if you heard that line?
Absolutely.
Because I think, you know, a lot of us feel the same way. A lot of us fall in and out of love, and when you're deeply in love and then it crumbles, you think that that's the end. I'll never love again. And I was looking at my age. I was 80 years old when I made this record. And I was looking at my life and I realized that I'm getting on. I know that I'm coming to the end of an incredible life. I certainly hope to be around for at least the next 20 years so I can be 100 years old. And it's been a long, strange trip, to quote the Dead.
Yes. Would you be up for playing us one of the new songs? Do you want to do that? I'd love to hear one of the new songs. Do you have a guitar handy?
There happens to be a Gibson right here.
Okay. Again, no obligation, but if it would be fun for you, I'd love to hear it.
Let me see what I can do.
Okay. excited to get the flavor and see what you've been, what's been on your mind, you know?
Yeah. This song I wrote for my wife, Amy, it's called Love of Mine. Very simple. It's just me on the record with my acoustic guitar and Todd Caldwell on piano. Love of mine, I didn't mean to hurt your heart so badly. I didn't mean to make your soul so sad about me and you. Love of mine, regretting every word I said to you. I can't take them back, but I wanted to, for me and you. How can I help your heart that truly wants to heal? Can I ever make it right? Tell the truth, I know exactly how I feel. I don't wanna be losing you tonight. Love of mine, I can't believe I might be losing you. And if so, I'll thank the universe for choosing you and me.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much for playing that. And the emotion in it is very palpable.
I love her.
I can feel it. I can feel it. We get to experience your love through hearing the song. Beautiful.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to touch your heart.
It's interesting. I asked you about writing, songwriting, and you answered the question as it relates to lyrics. So for you, is the lyrical content of the song the primary part of it? Is the music just accompanying the words?
Sometimes, yeah. I have this thing on my iPhone, I can be recording instantly, you know, so I put a lot of really, I have this idea and I put it down. And sometimes, like a little earlier, I was talking about I need a title. Well, that title has a rhythm to it, you know, a vocal rhythm. And it might match a piece of music that I've got in my mind that I haven't put lyrics to yet. And so in my mind, I have these bunches of music and these bunches of lyrics, and sometimes they marry. And that's how I write.
That's the end of part one of Rick's conversation with Graham Nash. We'll be back with part two, where Graham talks about the inspiration behind Rick's favorite CSN songs and share a story about Joni Mitchell, Jerry Garcia, and Marianne Faithfull very soon. So make sure to check in for that. In the meantime, you can hear all of our favorite Crosby, Stills, and Nash songs at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, and Eric Salmon. Our editor is Sophie Crane. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented three new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at marketmessage2024.com right now. Again, the link to watch is marketmessage2024.com. That's marketmessage2024.com. Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.